Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schuble.
Friends of the Rappahannock in this morning, we need to do this more. We friends of the Rappahannock here to talk about up and down the river and a bunch of issues. Derek Christian is in the executive director. Brent Hunzinger is here, advisory and advocacy, rather, and coastal programs director. It is good to have you guys here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks
good morning.
For having
good
us.
To be here.
Derek, you and I have done some things over on site, but this is the first time I've gotten you in studio, so this is a big
true.
Moment.
Yeah.
It's our debut.
Here I am.
So you've been with Friends of the Rappahannock now for a few years.
Yeah, 16 years.
That's a few years.
Yeah, been there a while, since 2010.
How'd you get involved in just, you know, river advocacy and just the environment?
I think because I always, when I was thinking about how I could have an impact, I always cared about environmental issues, but really I thought education was kind of the way to have the biggest impact for me. So that's how I got involved in environmental education. I was the education director at FOR. That was, you know, my first job there, and just kind of moved up as I've been there all these years.
I can't believe, because Brent's been in a bunch of times, Brian's been in a bunch of times, Kat's been here. And I can't believe that you have somehow gone all these years. But it is great to have you here this morning.
Thanks. Yeah, they just tie me to my computer, and then sometimes I get let out.
I look at it as most of the time, like, we have an agenda, right, that we're working on, and she's just, you know, basically making sure the organization actually, like, functions. So, you know,
that is kind of important. That is kind of important. For people who don't know, talk a little bit about Friends of the Rappahannock, because we're going to talk about a lot of the programs and a lot of the things going on. But if there are probably a lot of people who know the name but may not know exactly all the things you do, and you do many things.
We do, yes. And especially this time of year, I mean, it is just amazing what is going on at Friends of the Rappahannock all spring. But basically, we're a nonprofit that works to protect the Rappahannock River. We have three program pillars. So we do advocacy, restoration, and education. So those are the three main things that we focus on as an organization. We are a membership-based organization. So we have, you know, dues-paying members, which helps our voice. It helps, give some clout to our voice the more members we have. So if you're not a member yet, love to have you as a member. And we work watershed wide. We're one of the only organizations that covers the entire Rappahannock River. So we have three offices. We have our headquarters here in Fredericksburg. We have an office in Warsaw and one in Culpeper. So we really do strive to work the whole watershed because the river's a system, so you have to kind of be everywhere to really have an impact.
Yeah, no, I remember when Friends of the Rappahannock was formed, and then when those other offices opened, that to me really said this was more than just where you are in Fredericksburg. It's the whole, you say, it's the whole thing.
Yes, and you have to, you know, address issues across the entire river to really have the type of impact that we're trying to have. We are really focused on protecting our water quality, water quantity. So we really believe that we have to do that across the whole watershed.
And you look at it because what they're dealing with in Warsaw and the Northern Neck is so different than here, and in the same with Culpeper.
Absolutely. And they're all tied together. What's happening in Culpeper is impacting what's happening in Warsaw. So we have to really make sure we're addressing all of those issues.
You look like, Brent, you were going to jump in and say something. You were not. Okay.
Nope, she did a wonderful job.
Okay. Speaking of being a member-based organization, Wednesday this week, you've got your annual meeting.
We do, yes. So Wednesday is our annual members meeting. This is where we vote in our new slate of board members. So that's always really exciting. It's also just a celebration of our volunteers and our members. We give out awards for, for different folks, different partners across the region. We have barbecue. It's also a potluck. So people sign up to bring a dessert or a side, and we provide the barbecue. if you would like to come, we would love to have you. Even if you're not a member yet, you can come and become a member. And you can sign up on our website. It's really helpful if we have a good head count sure. of how many people are going to be there. But it's going to be a great night. I think, you know, we're pushing, 100 folks that are going to be there, which is a pretty good size event.
What time?
It's at 6 o'clock.
6 p.m.
Doors open at 5:30. It's right there on Fall Hill Avenue, 3219 Fall Hill. So, you know, come out. It'll be a great night. The weather looks like it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Riverfriends.org is the website. And that, yes. that site will tell you, give you all kinds of, it's a great website. And social media and Facebook, too, for the real immediate things. But if you go to riverfriends.org, but who doesn't want to get together by the river and have barbecue? And
yes.
I mean, you had me at barbecue.
Every once in a while, it's nice to get together and, like, celebrate the river and do these, because it just seems like these days there's a lot of rancor out there. So, you know, it's a good time just to celebrate being by the river together and like, kind of appreciate the resource that we have.
And when you mention that this really is these issues in the organization, no matter what side of some other things you're on, you can all come together over the river.
That's right.
That is pretty much correct.
That's the one thing we're so lucky to have what we have in this area. So again, if you're interested in becoming a member, or if you just want to check everything out, like Darius said, riverfriends.org, the website. The annual meeting is on Wednesday. We'll take a quick break and come back. Other meetings to talk about. I've got a question, too, for you that
That's why we're here, to answer your questions.
I don't understand something, and I want to come back and talk to you about that also. Riverfriends.org, Friends of the Rappahannock here, Daria and Brent. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
It is a Friends of the Rappahannock this morning. Derek Christian is here. Brett Hunzinger is here. Riverfriends.org is the website. So my question for you two is, and I don't understand any of this, and I'm hoping you can explain, oyster shells.
Sure, what? I can start off.
I see pictures of people like shoveling them, and I'm told that that's important.
Maybe holding their nose because it's a little stinky depending on the time of year.
So what's the deal about oyster shells?
Yeah, so oyster shells, first of all, oysters are a bivalve, a shellfish that create big, I call them the coral reefs of the lower river in the Chesapeake Bay, and they are a shellfish that filter the water. And they're really tasty. So there are restaurants that put them on the half shell you know, bake them. But oysters are a really interesting creature that they strike, or the young actually need hard, like the shells of the previous ones, or that calcium type surface that the shells are, to reproduce. So what we do, and they're expensive. It used to be that people would give you the oyster shells. They were making driveways with oyster shells. But now, because of the demand to clean up the Chesapeake Bay and install more oyster reefs, the shell is becoming more popular and in demand. And so we have started an oyster shell recycling program up and down the watershed, but very specifically successfully in Fredericksburg. So we work with there's a public drop-off spot for people's shells to keep them out of the landfill, because there's no point in them going to the landfill when we can use them to create more oyster habitat. The Fredericksburg Co-op is a public drop-off location right in front on the left-hand side. You can come drop your shells, and we check that every 2 weeks or weekly. We have volunteers. And then we have a couple of restaurants, Renato's and Port Oysteria. We have very successful programs where we twice a week we come get the shells. And we put them in a trailer. We drive them downriver where we have them on a concrete pad. We let nature kind of clean them for us. And then we either put them back into the river to create that reef, or we bag them and have a big old tank. It's basically a big jacuzzi tank where we put oyster larvae, little baby oysters. They become kind of, you know, tiny little shells. And then we distribute that into the parts of the river that need a little bit more help, like a little boost maybe with that.
And one of the really great things about the oyster shell recycling program is that it saves us literally thousands and thousands of dollars. Like Brent was saying, I mean, oyster shell for restoration purposes is a commodity. I mean, people sell the shells by the bag, and it's expensive. So doing it this way, I mean, we're saving so much money, and also being able to, you know, just continue the oyster restoration program. So we have oyster reefs in the lower Rappahannock where we are, they're just for restoration purposes. So these are not harvest, these will not be harvested. We're just growing the oysters for the benefit of the river to keep the, help keep the water clean. It also benefits the watermen who are down there growing the oysters to sell. So our oyster reefs is helping keep their reefs healthy. So it's kind of a win-win-win, win for the river, win for the, you know, watermen, win for us.
If you, and if you want to learn more about our oyster program, actually, Jennifer Sagan, our oyster restoration manager, is giving a talk at the annual meeting on Wednesday night, okay. So you can learn more. Also, it doesn't happen without our volunteers. So we have a lot of amazing volunteers. The Rotary Club, and, I mean, amazing people really help. And it's a thankless job. It's
smelly.
They're smelly.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They're, you know, dirty. But it is so critical to our work to have, you know, them. And then Jim Miller is our, like, uber mega volunteer.
Oh, Jim he is our, oh, Jim, yeah, Jim, Jim talks yeah. to me continually. Yes.
So he works from Culpeper down, like, multiple places to bring the shells for us.
So this is a big deal.
It is.
I didn't realize, you know, how having access to this really does help.
Yes, absolutely.
And there is a volunteer opportunity coming up on May 16th down in Weems where you can take our gigantic pile of oyster shell that's been curing in the sun and bag it and get it ready for us to use for our actual restoration. So that happens every so often, and there's one coming up on May 16th at 10 a.m. Again, information on our website if you want to sign up for that.
Yep.
So, and again, and you mentioned, and I'm sure with a lot of these topics, when we talk about volunteers, I'm sure there are a lot of volunteer opportunities.
Yes.
That you can use people for.
And I will say we always need volunteers for our big events like River Fest and other things. And then we have tree plantings. You know, our restoration mm-hmm. program really yeah. utilizes them. Sometimes of the year, it's more than others, but we're just kind of winding down our spring tree planting season where we had many volunteers working with students. The interesting part is, like, we've been able to we're blessed with such large plantings now that we have, even we're working with, like, contractors because of the size of the plantings. So we've been running the gamut from volunteers to, like, even contractors, which is really great.
And Liz Harris is our volunteer and outreach manager. So she does a wonderful job of making sure all of our volunteer opportunities are very well advertised through our social media and on our website. I mean, you can go on our website and it's just a list of opportunities to get involved, to volunteer. We have a conservation nursery in Culpeper that we run. So we grow trees for our restoration projects. There's always days for volunteers to go and help, you know, do work on the nursery. So there's some that are kind of steady and regular and recurring. And then there's, you know, other ones that come up that, you know, are kind of one-off.
And so. I will say there's another opportunity, or, like, throughout the time, that doesn't get talked about as much, but there's something called the Virginia Conservation Lobby Day that we have every year in late January, where advocates or would-be advocates who want to get more involved in the like, advocating for river conservation issues can come down to Richmond, where it's my job to help set up meetings with their legislators. And then we go in and talk about whatever the issues are that are important. Like, obviously, Ann Little is always going in and talking about trees. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, there are many people who have different issues that they want to talk about with their elected officials, both their senators and their delegates.
And Brent does a really good job of making that super accessible, because it can be, you know, it's a little overwhelming sometimes to go to Richmond during General Assembly. I know I had to learn the ropes from him. So he does a really good job of making you feel comfortable, making you feel prepared. Like, you can walk into that meeting and say what you want to say. And, you know, so
and,
it's a really
good And at the end of the day, like, they see people like me a lot. Our elected officials,
yeah.
What they really want to hear from is their constituents.
Just everyday
right?
people.
Exactly.
Yep.
So, and that's why it's so important to have that. And that, and then saying, like, on a broader scale, I mean, they need to hear from folks about the river issues, all throughout the year, not just for one day. It just so happens that's the day where people can go down and meet them at their offices when session is occurring.
When the governor was in town last week at Widewater, I got to see, I had never seen Brent in a suit. And I saw him, it was like this is legislative lobbying Brent.
Yeah, I've had to upgrade my my wardrobe, let's say, in the last couple of years. So,
but again, that kind of stuff is important as we talk about these issues. There you can volunteer, you can advocate, and you talked at the beginning, Derry, about how what Friends of the Rappahannock does in all of these, each component is so necessary.
Yes, and advocacy, like I said, is one of our main pillars. So it's something that we feel really strongly about that is an effective way to have an impact on the river. So really important for everyone to get involved in that, though. And I think the other thing that's interesting is how these three different kind of pillars intersect all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we're advocating for things, it has to do with our restoration activities, like we were talking about trees or oysters, you know, it all connects. We have kids coming out participating in these things. So we really try to, you know, they're not in silos, these three pillars, like they are interacting with each other all the time.
No, because what part of it is right now, because we have a new administration that has come in, I am trying to organize, and we have, like, for example, the Secretary of Natural Resources, hopefully to come out and visit. And we're hoping to get him and the deputy director out to visit the MIWI for Fredericksburg. And they're going to be kayaking so they can come out and see the programming that we're doing for environmental education, just to reinforce, like, how important things like environmental literacy can be for the, you know, and how those investments probably need to be beefed up at the state level funding-wise.
And just to kind of spell that out, a MIWI is a Meaningful Watershed Educational Experience.
I was just going to say, what in the world is that?
So MWEE. But it really is this program that Friends of the Rappahannock has really worked really hard to develop. It's the concept that kids learn about their watershed, they collect data, they understand kind of the science, and then they understand the stressors, what is, you know, putting stress on our water resources, and then how can they help mitigate that. So every MIWI ends with some kind of action project. The students actually do something, whether they plant trees, sometimes they build pollinator gardens, you know, they all kinds of things. Sometimes they do campaigns. They've been on the radio doing campaigns about what they learned through this program. So we have a longstanding relationship with the City of Fredericksburg schools. Recently, the plastic bag tax money has been allocated to help pay for this program.
Oh, wow.
So we partner with FAM and a couple other local partners, Parks and Rec, I should say. So we partner with those local groups and we offer this MIWI program, and the plastic bag tax money is what's paying for it. So it's, I mean, that's kind of the perfect model, really.
We may be too late by now, but I mean, I know in the summer you guys have some fabulous camps for kids. Are they sold out by this point?
Not almost, but I know there are a few spots left in our camp that is for rising first and second graders. Really fun half day program. They get to kind of, we call it extreme wading. So they get to get in the river and kind of splash around, but they don't actually like go in boats and tubes and stuff. That's the next level. So for this level, it's kind of the introduction to river recreation and all that.
I just dawned on me, it's perfect right now. You could only wade the river right now anyway. So, like, right. Hey, right?
You'd be dragging your boat.
extreme wading.
Speaking of that, boy, the...
How's that for a transition?
The transition, it was a perfect transition. The water level has got to be, I mean, it's concerning to me. It just, as a kayaker, it's concerning.
It is. So we're experiencing right now, and it's for the last few weeks, literally the lowest water levels ever recorded for this time of year, unfortunately. It's because we had an abnormally dry winter, even though we had that crazy ice storm.
Right.
That, you know, and that is probably in everyone's minds, but we had very little precipitation on either end of that.
Yep.
And so, like, a dry winter leads into a spring where we've had relatively little precipitation as well, and that's led to concerns about low river levels statewide. 80% of the state right now is in severe drought status. That was of this morning, I read. And then groundwater. So wells, like Caroline County has water restrictions in place right now as well. You won't see that happening probably in areas that are on like county water right now in Spotsy or Fredericksburg or Stafford because the reservoirs, they have reservoirs and they're doing okay. Like they might be down a few feet like you were talking about, but reservoir levels right now are generally are. But people should be thinking about, you know, water conservation as we go because it is a very essential resource. So, yeah, it's something that we're – climate change is definitely causing longer periods without rain and then a lot of it coming all at one time. But it also – those low water levels affect people's abilities like you were talking about to paddle the river and do that. And it's really truncated. We should all be able to paddle the river right now. And it's been really tough and not able to do so. So it affects like people like VOC. Who run, you know, so that is water supply planning is one of the main things that I've been working on as advocacy director. And that, you know, there's a mandated regional water supply planning process going into 2029. And there's two regions. The GWRC region is broken up into two different planning regions. Not sure why, but it is what it is. That's what they decided. I've tried to get them to work together, but there's
more
as with everything, there's politics that get involved with all the, you know, the localities.
Yeah.
That's part of the fun of the job. But then you have, you know, water intakes that are occurring. We had a permitted water intake that just got permitted that is being challenged by the Rappahannock Tribe, in Caroline County. And then, you know, there are other potential issues coming, from reclaim water systems with evaporation that goes to the cooling for data centers. They use evaporative cooling. And if we were to get kind of a clustering effect potentially at multiple of these counties in the city of Fredericksburg, you could see. Well, and the problem is it's not like they're withdrawing that maximum amount of water every day, every part of the year. It comes at a time like, so think about when the summertime, when you're having less, although the river's low now, right? So that kind of draws that a conclusion in the question a little bit, but low flows, low time of year, normally your wastewater from your wastewater treatment plants, because that's the reclaimed water, they treat the treated wastewater and send it via a different set of pipes. There's evaporation that happens. So you're potentially losing another pulse of water that would be cleaned and put into the baseline flows going downriver. And that's important, especially in the tidal area of the river, because you already have farmers who are having issues irrigating. So it's already dry. So right now they've been having to pull water to irrigate, but the salt line is already so far up in Essex County, King George County, that they are already beginning to see salt levels in the river, salinity levels so high that they're having to think about stop pulling for irrigation.
Those are some heavy issues.
Yes.
As we go along here, and this is also new. Too. So
it really is. We don't think of the East Coast as like we think of ourselves as water rich, right? And relatively we are compared to out west. It's just with the things that we discuss, climate change, different types of water users, and then frankly we're seeing the natural increase in populations. So you also have to like residential, commercial, there's more demand for water, right? And it's coming at more sparse times or even less. And so we just want to make sure that looking into the future, we're doing a good job with our partners at Department of Environmental Quality at being good stewards of that water and having those dynamic plans in place.
This is one of the great things that the Friends of the Rappahannock brings to the region, because I can remember years ago doing some of these very shows about fracking and how that was. I remember sitting here with John Tippett, and I had not even thought about that would be even an issue around here, and discussing how it could impact. And it's those kinds of things, I think, that you are able to bring home and talk about a part of data centers that, you know, maybe we haven't thought about.
Right. And because it's been looked at, that reclaimed water systems, and it's definitely better. You know, one of the things you hear about is, are they pulling it from groundwater? Are they using potable water, which is basically your drinking water that's treated? And then, you know, so the industry by and large has moved to reclaimed water, which is a net positive. It's just unfortunately, like we said, it's that clustering effect. It's the localized, like especially in the summertime, that you could see some issues potentially if we're not really looking at the permitting and maybe requiring cumulative impact assessments. I'll just lob that out there, but we'll see if we can get the EQ to agree to that.
Good stuff. These are the reasons why you get involved and become a member of Friends of the Rappahannock, and can follow this and also support the mission. Riverfriends.org for information on signing up. Also, check out social media with Facebook and all with Friends of the Rappahannock. Brett Hunzinger is here. Derek Christian is here. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:33.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. It's the only local talk show in Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform to hear Town Talk anytime, 24/7, 365. And now, Ted Schubel.
Derek Christian is here, and Brent Hunzinger is here this morning from Friends of the Rappahannock, riverfriends.org. Brent is involved with advocacy and the Coastal Programs Director. As far as advocacy, you mentioned it a little bit, Brent, about just all that you do down in the General Assembly. Well, overall, how did the session treat you this year?
It was interesting. Of course, so the dynamics were that we have a new governor.
Yeah,
and the House of Delegates, the Democrats were able to increase their majority. So for the first time in I guess 4 years, they hold the alignment. With that, so that, you know, every year is a different dynamic, always a good time. But so I would say I spent more time down there this year than ever, probably because of the legislation that we were working on. My main focus that we did get passed, like with basically 2 hours left to go in the session to get voted on, and then with 2 hours left to get signed, it's called Senate Bill 553, and that basically requires water suppliers, so basically like the utilities from around here in the city, whoever they are, to any water that they send to data centers as of today, until the bill goes into effect January 1, Department of Environmental Quality, the Office of Water Supply staff, does not receive information as to how much water data centers are consuming or using on any day.
Hmm.
And so that is, we felt like, and we still feel like that is a critical piece of data that, like we said, if we're doing regional water supply planning going into the future,
you gotta know that.
There should be transparency on all the different folks who are using water, right? And they are one of the relatively larger, more growing water users in the Commonwealth. Booming. I mean, by all accounts, the most booming industry in Virginia.
Yeah.
So that was Senate Bill 553. Actually, we're on Wednesday night. I am giving the Legislator of the Year award to the senator who carried that bill. So we're very appreciative of that. And that was a process. Not going to lie, the industry brings a lot of benefits to the Commonwealth. And so there, with that, the benefits, you know, a lot of negotiations have to happen over how to regulate, I guess, and what information should happen from the industry itself. So that was quite a bill, to say the least.
Well, and Brent, as you talk about this kind of thing, I mean, you really, your role is so important, both statewide and then also, we were talking some of these statewide issues. You also have to keep track of what's going on with local governments and with developments, and there aren't many off days.
No, that is correct. It is, you know, from how many localities? 18, like all the way from the headwaters to the bay.
Yeah,
there's a lot of issues. Some of them are similar, some of them are different. But let's just say that data centers and their associated infrastructure are a common theme most of the way down. Not as much in the Tidewater, and who knows what will happen in the future. They're a little bit resource limited with water, et cetera. But so one of the things we're seeing, if you're talking about locality-wise, and so I do state and locality work, is transmission lines are becoming a hot topic.
Yeah.
And so there is a transmission line that is being proposed that would run from Fauquier County all the way through Stafford that actually, and there's a meeting I wanted to make sure we mentioned tonight from 3:30 to 7:30 at the Hampton Inn. That's Quantico and Stafford.
Yeah.
If you go on Stafford's website, I'm sure the information is there. And Dominion is doing their second phase of those outreach meetings because that is a transmission line that they would be creating a whole nother line. It's going to be within the existing right-of-way that exists. It's not going to be a greenfield project, which means they're going to like do a brand new line with a new right-of-way. However, there are some potential issues because right now, maybe they develop 125 feet of that right-of-way, but the right-of-way itself since the 50s has been, my understanding, 325 feet. So they're going to be putting another 250 kV and maybe another 500 kV line within that right-of-way, which could have some impacts to natural resources and close to people's private property. And there's even an article in the paper this morning, I think, from the Free Press. I mean, people are angry. There's just a lot of, with the increase in demand for AI and our phones and, like, you know, critical for things for medicine and all that, but also kitty cat videos on Instagram and whatever. comes the needed upgrades, right? And so that's where the rubber meets the road in this. Some of this is like, if we want to have these accessible technologies to make our lives easier and go to that digital based ecosystem for economics and everything else,
how do you balance all
you have this? To have that infrastructure, and that's kind of what we're dealing with now. We're kind of grappling with that, and it just so happens that Virginia is the epicenter of kind of a lot of that. So
yeah, which keeps you busy, and there's so much at stake here, and like you both have said, what's happening and what happens in one part of the watershed impacts them all, but it's also different too.
It is different. You deal with a lot of, like, so for example, even the, like, the kind of, so if we're talking about restoration type projects, like we do a lot of fencing of livestock and everything in the headwaters. I think mm-hmm. we always talk about this. And then the tree planting's different. We do a lot of riparian tree planting in that area. In this area in Stafford, Fredericksburg, Spotsylvania, we'll do a lot of urban and community forestry. We have a really big thriving program for urban and community forestry. Parks, working with parks and schools and to putting those kind of trees like that we do with Tree Fredericksburg and our partners there.
Yeah.
And then downriver, it's mostly planting of old fallow fields and ag fields that for whatever reason they don't want to be farmed anymore. They're too wet, that they're just not, the conditions are not right to farm as much.
I've been out with many of your tree planting. I mean, if you want to have a good time and learn how to plant a tree, go out with Friends of the Rappahannock. They'll teach you.
Yeah, and it's true. And so really interestingly enough, we were talking about how the pillars of our organization kind of meet together. Unfortunately or unfortunately right now, we have had some challenges with federal funding kind of trickling down.
Yeah.
And so we rely on our friends at the Department of Forestry, Virginia Department of Forestry, for they have two urban and community forestry positions that the funding had been cut at the federal level. It was uncertain. And so we had a budget amendment in. And then so we haven't even really talked about the budget. Right now, the state does not have a budget. The negotiations are ongoing.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, we're supposed to have one by July 1st, mm-hmm. but obviously we have a thriving urban and community forestry program, but we depend on those urban and community forestry positions at DOF. And right now the funding for them is uncertainty because we don't have the budget.
Well, but that could be a problem.
It could be. And then we also have the Trees for Clean Water funding program where we are able to kind of stack funding from grants with that funding on top of each other to really make it work for our schools and our communities to plant those trees that are so critical to cleaning the air, cleaning the water, and providing shade for those areas that are getting really hot.
Yeah, no, Friends of the Rappahannock Tree Fredericksburg has done so much in this community. And like I said, I've been through and been out and watched you do it in a bunch of areas, and it's fun after seeing you plant some of these trees a few years later to go back and see mm-hmm. how they
you literally get to see the fruit of your labor.
Oh, you
right?
do.
I mean, it's really, and I live in Spotsylvania County. I get to walk to a local park and I get to see all the different trees that they planted last year.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was like you said, it was volunteer done. It's right on the river. And as of this morning, walking, it's 100% survival rate, which is incredible.
Okay, so, yeah, so, if you want to learn how to plant a tree,
they know, obviously, the staff knows what they're doing. So, shout out to our restoration programs for sure.
And I should say, too, you know, we've had tree giveaways that we've been doing for years in partnership with Tree Fredericksburg and some other folks. And that program is just has been so popular. We sell out as soon as we post, like, hey, we're having a tree giveaway. They're all taken. Like, people sign up, so that's another kind of really great, you know, way to get more trees in the ground.
And I think, too, like, coming from the point of community, the tree programs are something that kind of helps keep the ties to the school systems. It keeps the ties to working with our local officials in some ways. Because I always think about this, like, okay, like, there are times when I'm working with folks in the county where part of my job is not always to support certain things, let's say, right? So, like, sometimes it's nice to have other folks within our staff or within our organization that are able to, like, bring support and do these other things. So, you know, sometimes
it's not always against.
Yeah, because
or questioning.
You know, correct. It's a kind of a push and a pull with some of that, making sure that our localities realize that we do support work. And, you know, FOR's model at the end of the day is to bring the resources to the table to improve things from the beginning and be a part of the process.
And that is on some of these issues, sometimes you're questioning or, you know, bringing up points that either haven't been discussed or, you know, a locality doesn't want to discuss but needs to be talked about.
Right. We're the voice for the river.
Right.
I mean, that really, at the end of the day, we say this all the time, like, you know, what does the river need? And, you know, the river doesn't have a voice, so that's what we try to do.
Right. It's very true.
No, and especially with the data centers, because we don't know. We don't know, and to bring the questions up and to say, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And especially now with it being dry, and you don't want to commit something that's going to end up hurting the resource.
And we try to be very transparent about what our concerns are with the, you know, especially with the data center development and other big development things that are going on. You know, we have on our website,
we have our stance.
You
very,
can read
very
exactly
clearly,
what right. our, yeah, what our position is. These are the things we're concerned about from the river's perspective. There are so many things to be concerned about, but we really try to focus on these are the things that concern us from the river's perspective.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, sometimes some of the things that might happen are we look at projects or things like as one-offs, but it's my job as advocacy and our job to look at things in the cumulative.
Right.
And so the overall impact. So while something might be like a half an acre of a wetland impact, right, and so they get permission to impact it and they buy credits for somewhere downriver or something, it's just mitigation. What we're beginning to see, unfortunately, is certain watersheds throughout the region, like 3 acres here, 4 acres here. There's the Germana Drive where they're going to impact some acreage of wetlands there.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
So Massaponics Creek is one of the more heavily impacted sub-watersheds that go in Spotsylvania County. And so, you know, it's they're required to mitigate any wetland impacts. But the problem is when you add up all those cumulative impacts, you really begin to see the cumulative effect of the loss of those wetlands.
Yeah.
And that can really affect a creek that already has fairly degraded water quality.
And the mitigation isn't always happening in that sub-watershed. You know, they're buying credits elsewhere.
No, it can be happening
elsewhere.
Way down the river.
I was just going to say, something that, say, a Spotsylvania does could impact Orange or, you know, Culpeper can impact Fredericksburg.
That's right.
Those kinds of things.
And that's kind of the point. And so those are, you know, there's always ongoing issues. Another thing I never realized, private wastewater treatment plants. Never knew it was a problem. Turns out, like, you start reading things and uncovering data, and that we have beginning to realize there's probably some impacts from small private wastewater treatment plants who are not in conformance. With DEQ for pollution limits. And so, once again, while it's not like a major thing like the Potomac Interceptor that happened, obviously that got the news and what a nightmare that was.
Sure.
But these can have very real localized effects on people in those smaller watersheds that can stack up over time with that. So,
oh, it's always interesting when people move here and they'll be all of a sudden, you know, we will have gotten no rain. And then all of a sudden, the river rises, and it's because, you know, the Rapidan or something to the west it comes down here. And it's always, for a lot of times, people are, you know, how did that happen? We didn't get any rain.
Actually, and that's a great reminder. We're always talking about, if we have something to close on, maybe getting towards the end of it, river safety.
Let's do that. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. Because I just want to
right, because we're coming into the summer season.
Yes. Let's do that. We'll take a quick break and wrap this up this morning with Brent and Daria with Friends of the Rappahannock. Riverfriends.org is the website. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff with Friends of the Rappahannock. Brett Hunzinger here, Advocacy and Coastal Programs Director. Daria Christian is the Executive Director of Friends of the Rappahannock. Before we get out of here, we've got to talk river safety. Boy.
Yes.
And you can't talk river safety without, you got to wear a life jacket.
That's right. Yes. I mean, that is the number one thing that we promote is wearing your life jacket on the river. It's very unpredictable. The bottom is unpredictable. It just makes sense. If you're going to be in the river, just wear the life jacket. It makes it fun. You can just float around. You know.
Oh, it does. Well, and I see things when I'm out there, too, like with paddle boards. I rarely see anybody with a life jacket. You just want to say, hey. Get one on.
They'll have the PFD like
sitting there.
Yeah, on it.
It's not gonna do you any
like,
good.
You really need to have it on in case something with that. Right, and that. So we are in like hanging out by the river season, and you know, the PFD, like you said, makes it real easy to float around and not have to worry about things. So having everyone in the family wearing PFDs plus. The river can rise very rapidly from up and kind of come down river. There is a new gauge that VDEM put in, Virginia Department of Emergency Management, in Fredericksburg. That is a brand new gauge. I don't have all the information on that. But
okay, I didn't know that.
The important part to say is we're having more resources coming in to help us understand when the water is coming down.
Yeah, follow that.
And getting that out.
Your website has great information,
right,
too.
And then there's a lot of great information. It's called Respect the Rap. And that is a website that's dedicated to river safety. April Peterson has been instrumental in really getting
from River Rock.
From River Rock Outfitters in really standing that up and making sure that the community understands the commitment and the need to really be aware of being safe on the Rappahannock. Because at the end of the day, even if river levels can be low, it's a dynamic system and it can change overnight, especially this time of year with big thunderstorms and everything else like that.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, those gauges are really important, really great information. They're pretty easy to read. You know, if the water level's in the green, that means it's safe to go in with a life jacket. You should always have a life jacket. If it's in the yellow, that means please don't go in. And if it's in the red, absolutely do not go in.
Right.
So it's pretty easy, you know, to understand what that gauge means.
And know even when it gets into the yellow, unless you're really experienced, just stay away.
Yes.
Because you're ended up putting the first responders at risk.
That's right. And also there's some visual cues that you can use to see if it's safe. If the water looks extremely muddy and like chocolate milk, probably not a good time to go in. If there's a lot of debris floating down, like big branches and stuff, probably not safe to go in. So there's visual cues you can use beyond the gauges, too.
And that's actually important. After periods of no rain, all that debris builds up. And so the first big rain you get really brings that down because all the stuff that's lying close. And so the next big rain that we receive is really going to bring a lot of that down. So that piece of it is actually very timely as well.
But you get, and life jackets, they're not bulky like they used to be. And
yeah, it's not the type.
The orange ones.
Yeah. Wear your tie, right, back in the day.
And Friday is Wear Your Life Jacket to Work Day. April Peterson, again, at River Rock, organizes this really great event every day for river safety awareness. So everybody should be wearing their life jackets to work on Friday. We definitely will at FOR. So put your pictures up. We want to see them.
I'll wear it. I'll do it. I've got one. I'll do it. I'll even bring my paddle to work today.
There you go. Bring it.
Brent and Daria, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We got to do this
you.
More.
Appreciate
talk about this is good stuff. There are a lot of things going on, and you can join. The annual meeting is on Wednesday, riverfriends.org. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Greenline Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.